This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm here, and welcome to the 613th episode of Remarkable Results Radio. You are in for a treat in this very candid and transparent episode. Hey, here's another deep storyline, a story of attitude change and personal growth. Carl Hutchinson from Complete Automotive in Springfield, Missouri, helps you by sharing how he overcame negativity to forge a new and positive attitude. He says that he was not always the nice guy that he is today. Carl explains his reinvention and being grateful to the people in his life as a turning point in his career. I bet you know someone who could use an attitude transfusion. Carl Hutchinson is a founding member of the Midwest Auto Care Alliance, MOACA. His story of attitude adjustment will help many people who listen to his story. If you know someone who can benefit from Carl's story, please share this episode. This is why a podcast. It's stories like this that keep you in the front row of life in the auto service business. Carm Capriotto, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy, and our business acumen today is sponsored by NAPA. Thank you for always tuning in and listening to the Aftermarket's original and premier podcast. NAPA Auto Care is proud to partner with nearly 17,000 independent repair facilities. Now, with the goal to help members sell more needed repairs, it's no wonder NAPA Auto Care is the largest banner program. Now, if you like to learn more, speak to your NAPA representative today. Aftermarket Weekly brings you a slice of wisdom from my guest host each and every week and the only streaming live virtual shop tour. Hey, watch live at aftermarketweekly.com, where you can also see every archived broadcast. Now, the show is now a podcast. Find it on your preferred listening app. Search for Aftermarket Weekly and add it to your favorites. And you can find Carl Hutchinson's other episodes and this episode's key talking points. They reside at remarkableresults.biz/E613. Hey, make this episode your homework. Hey, a warm welcome to Carl Hutchinson from Complete Automotive, Springfield, Missouri. How you doing, Carl?
I am doing fantastic, Carm. Thanks.
Hey, glad to have you here. We got connected somehow through Jennifer Filson because you were in her book and I wrote the foreword for her book. And it was kind of cool that we hooked up. And I found out some fascinating things about you, an important member of the MOACA community, the Midwest Auto Care Alliance community out there in the great old Midwest.
That's right. We love the MOACA community, the Midwest Auto Care Alliance. I'm proud to be a founding member of that group. So, yeah, it's a great group of people to be in.
So cool. Spoke to Sherry today, in fact. And the other thing I love about what you're doing that you and I need to get on our soapboxes and encourage the rest of the independents is you're involved in automotive technology education at the college level.
We got a great community college here. They have a fantastic program that just continues to grow. They just keep adding things to it. They've added a whole new diesel program to it. It's just really, it's really encouraging to be on that, to be a part of the future.
And I'm on an advisory council. I've learned so much. I'm telling you, man, if you're an independent and listening to us and you haven't done the job of reaching out to the local community college, and here's the reason. I mean, both Carl and I know 80% of the board members and influence is from the dealerships.
That's right. The dealerships have really been the big influence in those community colleges. And, you know, they're gleaning out the technicians way before we ever even have a chance at even talking to them. So I would encourage everybody to get involved in their community college, sit on those advisory boards, go in and visit the instructors. I don't know how it is across the United States, but our community college is fantastic. They encourage us to come in and visit with them and talk one-on-one with the students and really just give them a good idea of what real life in the automotive world is. And then we're bringing them out into our facilities a couple of times a year, just letting them tour around, talk to the technicians, talk to the service advisors. So we want them to get a real-world idea as to what's going on. And yeah, I just can't say enough about being involved. It's been huge for us.
You just said two very important words, real world. I don't think you would have said that had you not been in front of these students, explained to them the real world, and they sit there and they go, really?
Yeah, I think they get filled up with a whole lot of expectations that are not true in all industries. They get fed a line that really that is not true. And we want people to come out and succeed. So really, we want them to come out and find out what it's really like to honestly stand on your feet for 8 or 10 hours a day. A lot of these kids never have, or move 8 or 10 hours a day. How many times you got to get in and out of vehicles, or put vehicles up on hoists, or write paperwork, or honestly have soft skills. Surprised at how many people don't have soft skills and know how to speak, or how to write, or how to at least get across their ideas as to what they think the car needs or customer needs, that kind of thing. There's just so many of those things that they don't have.
You're spot on the soft skills. I remember being at a big integrated board meeting for the college, and the college asked all of the business people in the room, 80% car dealers, and said, "You're doing a terrible job of teaching soft skills." And they go and they says, "Yeah, I think you're right." And so proven to your point. So thanks for bringing that up. Congrats on your ASE Master Certification L1 and Service Advisor Certification. And you're an AMI grad. You believe in training, man.
We've always believed in training, even way back when I was a technician. This was back in the days where you didn't even get paid for it. It was just an expectation. You know, you go figure it out. You go do it. You educate yourself. And, you know, I don't expect my doctor or dentist to do a good job without continuing education. So I sure as heck ain't going to expect automotive repair people to do it. So honestly, we pour on the education, and you know, you can't expect somebody to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. So, you know, I hold those credentials. I hold that master certification. I hold the AMI accreditations just for the simple fact, I want to lead by example.
You told me in a phone call we had that you're realizing that you're becoming an absentee owner. Now, I want to cover that, but I want to tease the audience to listen longer than sometimes they normally wouldn't. But you know, you're a hell of a nice guy. Were you always a really nice guy?
No, I really wasn't.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where all this started. Absentee owner, everybody dreams of being that, but you know, honestly, that's not my dream. You know, I want the business to run on its own. I want people to hold seats that I own. I want them to own them. But no, being a nice guy is not something that I would say that anybody would have said probably 10 or 12 or 15 years ago. I was the exact opposite. I was the guy that found the negative in everything and the most pessimistic guy in the room. And
did you also know everything?
I never went that far. I wasn't the guy that boasted that I knew everything, that I could fix everything, and that I was the king of all trades. But I was sure the guy that could suck the life out of you just within a few minutes. So
that's called toxic, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I hate to say, those people don't work for me anymore. Even I don't work for me anymore. So
I'm sorry. That is just one great line. I don't work for me anymore. Okay, great. There's probably a bunch of people that can kind of relate to that maybe hard-headedness.
I'd say that's a really good way to put it. Hard-headed is to the nth degree.
Let's talk about how you overcome this.
First of all, you have to have some great people around you and really people that are willing to stick it out and tell you that you're a jerk and that you hurt people. And that's hard to hear because you don't realize when you're going through it, you don't realize you're this big wave that's rolling over everybody and it's really hurting people's feelings. Just the things that you say or the look or the glance or the body language or all of that. But you got to have some really strong people in your corner. And I've been blessed with a really core group of people that somehow or another saw more in me than what I saw in me. It was persistent, just, hey, you've got to change, you've got to change, you've got to change. And when you don't know what's wrong, you don't know how to change. I had this really core group of people that just wanted to just pour into me and keep encouraging me. And, you know, nobody likes to read books. I mean, I never liked to read books. But hey, you know, it's here, read this book. Or maybe you ought to attend that seminar. Maybe you ought to attend. Yeah.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, listen to how Carl committed to writing 52 thank you cards. Hey, it's Carm here. Today, I have a special message for Napa Auto Care Centers who are looking to take the next step in growing their business and partnership. Now, if you're ready to strive and take it to the next level, Napa invites you to consider Gold Certification. Gold Certification is a premier tier of Napa Auto Care that recognizes repair shops with a higher level of participation in the Auto Care program. The program was built by Auto Care Centers for Auto Care Centers to provide a consistent consumer experience, maximize technology leverage, and reward Napa's most committed partners. When consumers visit a gold-certified auto care center, whether it's a small facility in a rural community or a multi-bay shop in a large metropolitan area, they can expect a first-class service repair experience. This includes a well-trained staff using today's technology and quality Napa parts in a comfortable, up-to-date facility. Customers at gold-certified shops will also enjoy an extended parts and labor warranty, valuable saving opportunities, along with access to credit to pay for needed repairs, and a whole lot more. Here's what you need to qualify for the program. First, you need to be an active auto care partner for at least 12 months and have a steady business presence in your market for at least 2 years. Then, to become gold certified, it's necessary to meet specific requirements, chosen because they create the most consistent consumer experience and proven to generate the most significant results for auto care centers across the country. Some of these include using digital vehicle inspection, having at least one ASE Master Certified Technician, a co-branded exterior, and offer consumer financing through Napa Easy Pay. You must also be an active member of a business development group. Once your shop achieves gold certification, you'll receive a number of benefits, including priority placement on Napa's shop locator pages, an allowance for marketing funds, 3636 peace of mind and local labor coverage, access to auto tech training, Napa Trax shop management system, smart sign digital menu board, and more. Talk with your servicing Napa store to find out everything you need to know about becoming a gold certified shop. It happens all the time. People say, hey, you got to read this book, you got to attend that seminar, and people ignore it. What motivated you to cross that line and listen to those people?
That kind of goes into the deep personal part of it. You have to go through some life-altering events. I'll be real honest, you know, the marital situation was not good. And we were going different directions, and I was a jerk, and I didn't realize it. And
Wait. You were a jerk. She didn't call you a jerk, did she?
Oh, that's probably the nicest thing that I was called several times. So, but, you know, it was one of those things we had to back up and figure out that this is way much bigger than we are. And, you know, I had to get my act together. And honestly, we gave it all to God, and then things started clicking into place. And then all of a sudden, you start realizing that you have baggage, and you don't understand, well, what is that baggage and where is it coming from? And most people don't even realize that that baggage is altering the way that they treat people. And you can't just go out, or I couldn't just go out and just fix it all in one day. There's just no way to, you don't even know what to fix. So you just start I call them get the small wins. You know, you create a list of things and you look at that list and you go, well, what can I do today? You know, what can I do today to finish something and make an impact somewhere? So I had a list of several things that I needed to do. And one of those, a good friend of mine, you know, suggested that I read Emotional Intelligence, the book Emotional Intelligence. And like I visited with you before, it's like, I think the first 5 or 6 pages, you got to take a test to find out where you're at. And I don't know that you can physically fail the test or not, but I think I did. And I was really, really down on myself for being that far out of touch with what I thought I should be. And honestly, I walked away from the book for probably 6 months or a year, or maybe even longer. But the idea of it was that instilled in me the knowledge of the things that I was weak on, the things that I really, really needed to address. And then I just started putting this small plan in place of, well, what do I want to do? You know, what piece of this puzzle do I want to attack? And I was really never a really grateful person. So I had this bright idea that I'm going to write one thank you card every week for a year. And so I just started picking people in my circle, and I wrote everybody in my closest circle a thank you card with just a little acknowledgement of something that they did that was impactful to me. And, you know, the first 5 or 10 or 12 of them, those are pretty easy. I mean, you could think of 5 or 10 people just real fast to write a thank you card to. But when you get into the 40 and 50 and you get into that range, all of a sudden you're thinking your mailman, you're thinking the UPS driver. You know, I've run out of people real fast. So I really didn't know how that I touched these people by sending letters out to them and how it impacted them and what they did and their reactions to me. And honestly, it started lifting this burden of not being grateful. And then all of a sudden it was easier to be grateful to everything that I did because I had went through this year-long process of being grateful. And you start finding just, you know, you're grateful for little things like fresh air and toothpaste and, you know, all the silly little things that we just take for granted. Well, all of a sudden you start changing your attitude and your mindset about how you think about everything, that you're grateful for all of these things that we just take for granted. But really, they're gifts. They're gifts to us. And we need to think that way. So once you start that positive change in your outlook, it's infectious. It just keeps growing and keeps growing and keeps growing. So
you really started to figure out how to shed baggage.
I really did. And, you know, there was a piece of my personal life I even realized that was a baggage over me. I came from a fatherless family. My father left when I was a baby. And we grew up in a real negative outlook of him. As my children got older, I noticed that my children were negatively impacted by the things that were being said about something that happened 50 years ago.
So they heard you speak and then it was affecting them.
Oh, absolutely. Because I had just this negative outlook about him. And, you know, he's a good guy. He really is. I mean, he's done things well. He's lived a good life. He's raised another family. He's a member of the church, member of the community. But we don't have that. We don't have that positive piece of it. We just only have the negative piece of it. And I realized that I had to bury that. And so I wrote him a letter and said, hey, whatever happened in the past is past. Whatever future we want to have together, we can have together. The ball's in your court. He called me up. We started a relationship. And all of a sudden that baggage, that weight lifted off of, well, what do you do with this person that's in your life but not in your life? And putting the positive pieces in it, not just the negative pieces. And I didn't even realize that it was a huge deal to me until it was over. And then it was, had a whole different light on the subject. And it was really a weird way to change your personal outlook. But I think more of us have this personal baggage that we drag around with us than what we realize. We think, oh, we can deal with that. That's not a big deal. But you start adding 3 or 4 of these things together and they're hanging on you. Well, all of a sudden you've got a lot of weight on you that is dragging you down in other parts of your life. And honestly, you can't be a good leader, can't be a good mentor to somebody else if you're drugged down and you're not making wise decisions. So that, it really impacted me. And that's really kind of when things really started, I'd say, go down the other side. You know, instead of climbing up the hill to fix things, now we're on the other side of it going, well, how can I help other people? What can I do?
What are some of the steps that helped you get out into, quotes, air quotes, real world? Was it the fact that you'd started to, you know, join some groups? I mean, you said church. Were there any other things that got you exposed?
Oh, yeah. There's so many things that have been just small steps along the way. And joining different groups is huge. And I didn't realize how big of an impact that was, too. Getting in a church and getting involved in our church and really just getting involved with the youth groups and getting plugged in somewhere was a big impact of it. Changing the people that you associate with, and I'm on a friendship basis, and I can't remember who quoted it. It's been quoted so many times over, but you are the average of the five people that you hang around with most. So, and it's true. If you want to be a positive person, you can't hang around negative people. It doesn't work. You can't be the most positive person in the room. So you have to hang around people that are more positive than you. That's the only way it can be. Changing people that you're around, getting into peer groups, having some accountability partners, that's huge. Getting plugged into the community is huge. Just those kinds of things where there's impactful people around you that they want to be around you just as much as you want to be around them.
I got it. Now, did you own the business during all this negative stuff? And did you lose a lot of people because of it?
We purchased the business somewhere in the latter part of all of this. We'll be on 13 years old this year on our business. My personal change really didn't happen until just shortly after that. It's probably one of the reasons why I wound up buying a business as opposed to being employed. I look back now and I don't know that I would have hired me either. So,
first of all, I guess you got to want to change.
You have to have the desire to change, and you have to be able to see the other side of, well, what does change look like? And, you know, when you look at other people that are, I hate to say, on their game or have it all together, or this person that you're just automatically drawn to, well, what do they look like? And how come I can't be that way? We're only what we tell ourselves that we are. And if you tell yourself that you're a negative person or you're a jerk or whatever, well, that's what you're going to be. But yourself that, hey, you know, if I work a little bit this, I can be that nice guy. I can be that guy that people want to work for. I can be that guy that my wife wants to be married to, or my children want to have as a father. And you have to figure out, well, what that is and how to change and how to get there. And really, you got to have great people around you.
Oh, imagine the impact on the culture of the business.
Our culture of our business has changed dramatically since we started. You know, we have an open, friendly family environment, and it's really hard to do in any kind of a business to get everybody on board and come to work and want to be there and want to camaraderie and know that that there's somebody that's leading this company that is a nice guy. I mean, we hold people accountable. We do have to be boss, and we do have to be that guy that hires and fires people. But we're also that guy that loves on them too. We figure out, you know, what do we do to take care of our internal customers and our external customers? Because our internal ones are just as important. You know, we want to know about their families and their children and their hobbies and how do we support them? What do we do for their birthday? What do we do for their wedding anniversaries? Those kinds of things. And how do we have a great year-end party? That's the fun part. It didn't used to be fun. It used to always be a headache, but now it's fun getting these people together, and they know that there's more to this than just work. There's more to this than just an income. It's more than just a job. It's a huge family.
By the way, Jim Rohn was the one who said that we are the average of the five people we spend the most time with. You start fixing your attitude, and you probably started to hire better and see that some of the people that were leaving you for all the wrong reasons were staying.
That's correct. You know, you hire people that you want them to be like you. And if you're not a nice person, you wind up hiring not nice people. And, you know, you kind of want to clone yourself. But once we figured out the attitude of our business and the positive part of our business, our types of people that were applying for jobs with us started changing. You know, they understand that type of culture that we are, what the opportunities are, and they just start weeding themselves out. And it's really kind of cool because we don't have that many people to respond to ads now that don't fit our culture. They just automatically, they can read our ads and figure going to fit or not, or they look at our website, or they call up and talk with us. And you know, there's just some non-negotiables in our business, and once they figure out what the non-negotiables are, they figure out pretty quick that they fit in or not.
I love what you said. They can read our ad and figure out what kind of place we are, but also the talk in the industry. Other techs know how you treat your people and what a great place it is to work.
It took a long time, you know, to get a reputation in the industry that's not a good reputation is easy. Getting a positive reputation and a desirable place to work at, that takes a long time. And that in itself has been huge for us that, you know, we're starting to get some just a great reputation in the industry, and they're calling us for advice, which I thought was really weird. And that was one of the things that blew me away about 2020 when this COVID thing hit. We started having other business owners call us and ask us, what are we doing? What advice can we give? And it's like, well, who am I? You know, I don't have any great answers, but you know, this is what we're going to do. And it seemed to work for us. So we came out on it.
There's no doubt that that happened many times across the country. There was no history written. There were no precedences set. And he says, well, great. If Carl's going to do it, then I'll do it. And if not, if Carl's going to do something and I want to do this, we can have a hybrid idea of it called rip off and duplicate everybody's great ideas. But the really neat thing of people calling you means, in my book, that you become a strong influencer.
Well, you know, that's what other people tried to tell me. And it's like, well, you know, the people are looking up to us, and it's like, you know, I never have seen myself in a position of that kind of influence or that kind of knowledge. You know, I've just always tried to look at my mentors that I have locally and nationally and look at them and see, well, what are they doing? Maybe ask them questions, but I never placed myself in that position. I never thought I would be in that position that somebody would be looking to me as a mentor, which was really taken back because I honestly thought they were fishing for ideas or fishing for secrets. And it's like, I don't have any secrets. I hate to say that I just put blinders on and we went to work, you know, and we followed all the rules and did what we could do to keep people safe and secure. And really we just, you know, we can't do anything about the national economy, but we can sure do something about complete automotive's economy. You know, if we knuckle down and get after it, well, we can do something about it.
Many of the people that listen to me loyally and often, and I appreciate you, by the way, who do that. You know my stance on the secret sauce. Anyway, so we were talking a little earlier in the show about becoming an absentee owner, and you were telling me that you implemented the EOS system, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and that's really been a strong thing for you.
It's been a game changer for us. We've been in various groups that have been talking about doing this, you know, setting up a leadership, you know, setting up managerial positions and giving people accountability. And, you know, it's really hard to do on a small business scale, especially if you're not a business-minded person. You know, I didn't go to school to be a business person. I went to school to be a technician. You know, I don't know how to run a business. But we all find ourselves in different seats at some point in time. We started on the book Traction a couple of years ago, and I'll be real honest with you, it's probably one of the harder business books to read that there is out there, especially from a business owner standpoint, because you want to start doing this stuff, and it's hard to read it and do it. So I always tell everybody to stop reading it. Go get the other book, What is EOS? Read it first. Then go read Traction, and then you'll be much better.
Where do you fit the book, How to Be a Great Boss? Is that in there somewhere?
Oh, yeah, it's right in there. That's another Gina Wickman book. Yeah, you got to put it right in there. It's three out of four books that you got to read. Actually, there's about five books you need to read to really get it going good. But we had a great implementer. He's in my circle of friends. Most of us know Barry Barrett, if I can drop the name out there.
Absolutely can. Great friend. And in fact, Barry and I are going to do a series on EOS this year.
Oh, I'd love to be a part of that if at all possible. But, you know, I don't want to interject myself into something else.
Thanks for volunteering.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I want to get other people involved in this. So long story short, Barry got me involved in this, and we put this together, and putting together a leadership team is not an easy thing to do. I'll tell everybody that you got to be pretty serious about opening up your business to the people that's on your payroll, and they need to have a certain criteria. And I am blessed to have three other people on our staff that are on our leadership team. We had to paint a picture of where we wanted to go, and we didn't know how to get there. And I said, hey, there's this idea that we have that we're going to bring in an operating system. And for us to get where we want to go, we can't get there by doing it the way that we're doing it. And so for us to get to the next step or the next level, we wanted to bring in this EOS system. And it's not an easy task. I'll be the first one to tell anybody. It's not an easy thing to do. When Barry and I sit down and he says, hey, don't be too shocked when this thing takes a year to get to actually get to the traction part. I thought, oh, we're overachievers. We'll have this thing up and going in 3 months and we'll be rocking and rolling. And that's not true. It takes a year. I mean, it honestly takes a year. I just got out of our L10 meeting just before this and probably one of the best meetings we've had in a long time, just for the simple fact we're at that year mark now. And to get the system up and going and have people that have ownership in their position, not just the position that they were hired for. So we've got production leaders, we've got sales leaders, we've got an integrator. Each one of those seats holds other seats. I don't know how deep you want me to get into this, but it's pretty deep when you really get into it.
I guess our job here is to whet the appetite of other shop owners that are out there realizing, hey, you know, what happens when I get so successful and I can't seem to find, you know, that next plateau, that next level. And I continue to hear from so many in the industry that EOS is it. You have to be patient in order to make it work.
Boy, that is so true. You have to be patient because, you know, honestly, the first 3 or 4 months, there's a lot of input that goes into it. There's a lot of crying, a lot of laughing, a lot of arguing that goes into this because you start giving your seats away. And when I say that, if you've not read the book or not, if you've not been involved in it, basically it's how many jobs do you do? And when we did our first planning meeting, we threw them all against the wall and my staff was shocked at how many things that I had to do that they had no idea about and how important they were. But any one piece of that, if it fell off, well, the business suffered. And, you know, they just said, well, okay, our first plan of action is to give Carl's seats away. And it's like, well, there's only so many people here that are going to take them. So we had to divide them up and conquer them. And now we're really getting the traction part of it. And, you know, it's so cool now that when the leadership team goes, well, I think we ought to do this and I'll take that one. And I think we ought to do this and I'll do that. Or, you know, that falls under the sales seat. So, you know, they're going to take care of that one. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I don't have to do that. That's really crazy. I always did that.
And I want to do it because I want to learn it before I delegate it. No, Carl.
Right. And now, you know, I truly have people around me that are way much better at this stuff than I am. And, you know, now I can back up and do this. This is the stuff that I need to be doing now. And it's honestly, it's being the leader of our company and what is the next step. And honestly, I think everybody that's growing, the ownership, the guy that's doing the ownership and the general manager stuff will absolutely overload himself if he doesn't do some kind of an operating system. And by far, this is like the most awesome thing that there is.
So glad to hear it. As I said, Barry and I are going to be doing a series on EOS and some, you know, in the different, I think there's going to be 7 different episodes based on 7 different criteria. I have read Traction. I have read Be a Good Boss, Be a Great Boss. And I'm right now working on the 4 quadrants, by the way.
Oh, yeah. 4 quadrants is a fun exercise.
Yeah, I started it this morning, and I would say that out of the 30 things that I wrote down, 55% of them were I should be delegating them. Barry and I spoke this morning, and he just said, you know, because I'm looking to do something else, you know, get some more people to help in the business And so, you know, you just can't, oh, there's a person that can fog the mirror and, you know, let him do these 10 things. No, let him do the 10 right things.
Well, it's so cool. Like I said, we just had our L10 meeting, and one of the things that came up was we needed to hire another support person. And it's like, well, okay, somebody needs to write a job description for that. Wait a minute, that's not me. I don't have to write that job description. That's somebody else's job description because they own that seat. Whoever's going to be the leader over that support person, they get to write the job description.
Let me ask you, do you like writing job descriptions?
Oh, no.
This is too much fun. By the way, I know you're a big community-minded person. The business is you are. And you're going to come on and do a Tunnel Academy all about giving back to the community. And so I would love to go into it here, but you'll be able to hear Carl on with the panel talking about community in the very near future. Yeah, we're going to have a blast doing that. Just a total blast.
You got some great people doing that one. Jennifer's a blast.
Hey, it was great. Would you come back someday or be on a panel again?
About any time that you want me to do something, I'll do it.
I'll put you on the short list, buddy.
I love giving back to this industry. I love to see it succeed. I love to see shops succeed. And honestly, I love to see people succeed within it. And, you know, anything I can do to push that forward, you know, just sign me up.
You have a phenomenal story to tell. And they're from the School of Hard Knocks and having a negative attitude, and so glad to hear it. Thank you for being so transparent. Carl Hutchinson, Complete Automotive, Springfield, Missouri. Thanks for being here, man.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.